Welcome back to Ladies with Gumption. We recap DCTV in a flash. I am May, and I'm here with
Tatiana
and Jessica.
As always, you can find us and reach us on Twitter at DCTV Gumption. Email us your lovely thoughts at ladieswgumption@gmail.com or send us asks on Tumblr at ladieswgumption.tumblr.com. And you can find all of our episodes on the Podomatic website, iTunes, and Google Play. Whew. News. First up is our first look at Ruby Rose as Batwoman in her full costume, which is very comic accurate. Thoughts on that? Did we like it?
I love that.
Yeah.
If that's what she looks like, then that's definitely going to be one of the better costumes of DCTV, I think.
Yeah. That's half the battle. They've completed that half. The other half in that costume.
Yes, I agree. It looks great. It does look good, yeah, for a first-time costume. So we'll see how that looks in live action. Moving into Black Lightning, they have cast Robert Townsend and Bill Duke as Dr. Napier Frank and Agent Percy Odell, respectively. Agent Odell is described as a hard-nosed and dedicated ASA official, which we saw in the first episode, while Frank is a straightforward yet warm member of the Freeland School Board and a longtime ally of Jefferson Pierce, who also appeared in the premiere. So they announced those right before the episode, which was great. And then DC Universe Harley Quinn's animated series has cast Raul Coley as the voice of Scarecrow. So that's exciting.
Yay! Sad because it's a reminder that iZombie is dead. But yay, because Raul Coley will get to feed himself.
Did you guys even watch the last season of iZombie, or did you just kind of bail?
I kind of petered out, like, midway through. Yeah.
That's fair. I say this as having never seen the show.
I didn't see very far in it. I don't know why. Like, I just stopped, like, two episodes in. Even though I love the show. But oh, well.
Into the first season or into this?
No. Into the latest season.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like it's that shift. Like, I feel like there's a thing in my mind that if something is going south soon, that I just subconsciously stop myself before it gets there. And I feel like that's what happened with iZombie.
That's smart, before you get mad.
Yeah.
All right, and finally we have Arrow, which has unfortunately promoted Kirk Acevedo, a.k.a. Ricardo Diaz, to series regular season 7. So any hopes that we thought that he was just going to disappear into oblivion have disappeared.
Yeah, no offense if you're a fan of Diaz, but we are not.
Yeah.
So not here for this.
I'm actually really surprised about that, because I guess they're just really in love with him, because, like, yep. Fandom is not.
Like, what else can he do if he, like, murdered 3/4 of the only other interesting villain on the villain group?
Well, I thought it was going to be the Longbow Hunters. I mean, I think that maybe it's, like, they're redoing season 6. Like, season 6 was so bad that they're like, let's just show that we can do that better. Now we're going to actually make Diaz as a good villain.
That's, like, let me, like, rewind and was gone. And we'll tell you what we really wanted to.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Moving into feedback, we'll start with KJ, and then I'll read the rest, because Jess, you have some words for KJ about Merlin and why he was a flop, because KJ thought he was the goat.
Yeah. Like, first of all, thank you for sending us a 2 1/32 seconds of a page email. And sending us your thoughts. But yeah, like, I don't really know, like, when KJ stopped watching Arrow to have, like, Merlin as the greatest of all time. Because, I mean, I guess for me, like, I feel like I should have included him on the flop side for Arrow.
Yeah.
Because we didn't really go into why we thought he was a flop. But since I'd already, like, crowned Ra's al Ghul as a flop, we just went with him. But for me, I feel like Tommy Merlin should have been Dark Archer and Oliver's nemesis, because that's how it appeared to be set up initially. And that's where all, like, the tension was. That's where all the drama for the story was. That you've got, like, all of Oliver's strongest relationships were tied with Tommy Merlin. So there was enough material there with Oliver, Laurel, and Tommy. And then again, you have Oliver, Thea, and Tommy, since Thea thought she was in love with him at first. That having Tommy be the Dark Archer and maybe trained by Malcolm would have been a more compelling story.
Absolutely.
Oliver and Tommy had their own parallel with them both being, like, rich kids with, like, bad guys as fathers. And then Oliver starts out, like, this reckless rich boy or whatever, and you see Tommy's, like, the more mature, responsible one, but then that gets, like, flipped around, and Oliver comes back, and Oliver's the hero, and Tommy is the villain. Like, that would have been, like, really cool dynamic in, you know, interesting parallels and contrasting things all over the place. The Malcolm-Oliver dynamic never really reached the potential that Tommy and Oliver had, and oftentimes, like, Malcolm just comes off as a little bit ridiculous to me, so yes. it's another, like, Rick, Eddie, and Tom reverse Flash situation, which, I mean, like, apparently in that regard, Flash did not learn from Arrow, because I feel like Tommy was set up to be the villain, but as soon as they thought that they could cast Barrowman, they stripped, like, they used the Dark Archer to get Barrowman to sign on and stripped it from Tommy and then killed him off. And which they repeated with Flash, with, I think, Rick and promising Eddie would be a reverse Flash, but then they got Tom Cavanaugh and was like, well, we'll give you a reverse Flash if you come with us. So I feel like that happened, you know, in both situations, and only one of them worked out because Tom did really good with reverse Flash, but I still think that Tommy would have been a better Dark Archer for Oliver.
I completely agree with that, and I mean, he's right that we probably should have brought him up, and I think you're right that we just sort of went with Ra's al Ghul, because that was more recent, and the floppingest flop. Whereas I do think that in the first season, like, kind of like Reverse Flash, but not quite as good. But the first season was John Barrowman as Merlin's best season. Because even then, there was still a possibility that he was going to train Tommy. You know, it was like, oh, well, he's like a dark force in Tommy's life. He's going to flip it. You know, whatever. So there was, like, a malevolence there. And then there was that, like, weird dynamic with Moira, whatever. There's lots of good stuff going on. And then they killed Tommy, and then they just made him pointless. Like, once Tommy's dead, what is the point of you, Merlin? Nothing. Yeah. There's no point to you.
I feel like when he was, like, training Thea, and that was his peak. I don't know if that was season 2 or 3. I can't remember.
I think it was 3. Because she goes to him to ask, because she doesn't want to be in pain anymore or whatever, so she wants his help.
Right.
And then he, like, brainwashes her into killing Sarah, which was awesome.
Yeah, that it was all downhill from there.
Yep.
Yeah, but I still think Ra's al Ghul is the flop of the flops, because he didn't have, like, he was only around for one season, and he didn't even have time to redeem himself in any type of way. Whereas they kept Merlin around for longer than necessary, but at least he had potential for different arcs.
Yeah,
right? Ra's didn't have any of that.
Merlin passed his expiration date.
Yeah.
Yeah, he should have died in season 1, and that should have been Tommy's, like, you know, my dad died because of the Green Arrow, and then I'm going to be evil.
Yeah, I agree.
Oh.
KJ has more thoughts. For Flash, he really wants Wally to be part of the 100th episode and thinks Linda could still return since she could have been at CCPN this whole time and we just didn't see it. which honestly, like, they could do, because they did that for when she disappeared at the end of season 1, and then she showed back up in season 2. It's like, hey, I'm here. For Black Lightning, he does want Khalil to be redeemed because he isn't past the point of no return. And he won't be watching Arrow, Supergirl, or Legends this season, but hopes Felicity confronts Oliver about making decisions without her and that Thea and Roy don't break up. So he's on the same boat as you, Tati. And for Legends, he thinks they should tone down the humor and treat certain time periods more realistically in terms of how, like, Jax and Amaya would have actually been treated versus, like, what is shown on the show. Which he
really
agree with, yes. And finally, for Titans, he hopes Dick becomes Nightwing by the end of season 1, and he's down for Starfire and Dick, even though he prefers Barbara and Dick. we got an email from our lovely friend Ivy, who wishes Jess and Tati a very happy birthday. And yes. And it's all good, Ivy, because my birthday isn't until February, so no worries, you didn't miss it. She loved the Flash episode and Nora. She thought she was a great mix of Barry and Iris, and that the West Allen family scenes were very magical, which I agree. She knows she might be in the minority, but she's looking forward to delving into why Iris and Nora's relationship is the way it is right now. And hopefully once they fix it, they'll be really close. And she also thinks that it was smart that they implied the reason Barry never cared about the newspaper because he always assumed he came back, which I wrote in my review actually, because I thought about that. I was like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. He always comes back.
That's what I've always said. It's just another Tuesday, right?
Yeah.
And that's why he says, that's why he's like, how long? Because it's like, I've
got this. I'll be back in 6 months. It's fine.
You know, 1 week. So.
Yeah. And then she has two questions for us. The first one, how important do we think the day jobs will be this season?
More important than they were before.
Right. I mean, based on the premiere, you would say not very important, but I think that we're going to get a little bit more of it. Like, we even had that whole scene expositing Caitlyn's family storyline at a crime scene, and there was no reason that it needed to be that way, right? They could have just had that in Star Labs like they do every other season, but that was a sign, I think, that we are actually going to get out of Star Labs and do things.
Yeah, and the fact that they're splitting them up, like, you know, Todd said the format was changing, that they would do a lot more pair and trio work with different storylines, that gives them a chance to get out of Star Labs and do things, which, as an aside note, I don't really know how Caitlin and Cisco even got on that crime scene. Well, I guess Cisco technically is with CCPD, but I don't know how Caitlin got on there. But anyway, I'm not gonna question it too hard because they were out of Star Labs, so yay for that.
I agree, and I think that they're gonna focus more on Barry being a CSI, and then I know that Cecile's going to, she talked about, Dani Nicolette talked about being a working mom, and then Iris will obviously do some journalism on the side, so it'll be hopefully a bigger world for Flash. And number two, what do we think Cisco will be doing this season?
Who fucking knows?
Cisco? What will Cisco be doing this season?
Yes.
I really hope he's going to be like, investigating his powers and coming back stronger than ever before with them.
That's a good hope.
I think he's actually going to lose his powers for more than one episode, like for several episodes, and I hope that they explore him as a, just as a person, minus character, since this season is about legacy. So, like, what will Cisco, the person, be leaving behind other than who he is as Vibe?
So, and then when he gets his powers back, they'll be better than ever before.
Yes.
Yay. Combo.
All right. Moving into our second or third feedback, really, from Shang. He sent us two separate emails. The first one was theories and hopes for Arrow and Supergirl and Legends. And then he did Flash and I think Titans as well. But since we're going to discuss those, or they already premiered, we're going to just talk about Arrow, Supergirl, and Legends. So he's okay with Legends not having a big bad and thinks the finale could just be them closing the breach that gave them the magical creatures. And finale theory for Supergirl is that Kara will have to fight her evil self and choose whether to kill her or not, which I think will be fascinating of the whole, like, she doesn't kill thing. And for Arrow, he wants NTA to do well without Oliver.
Same. Yes. I want that so bad.
And Flash Thoughts.
Good feelings. Shay.
Yes, definitely good feelings. For the Flash Thoughts, which was a completely separate email, didn't like that Cisco called Cynthia Gypsy, especially after finding out her real name last season. Mm-hmm. Thinks Mr. Miles, the curator, could really be Reverse Flash in disguise, which is something Jess will discuss further in her theories in the Flash section. And like Jess, believes Nora might be lying about where she got the Flash ring from.
Yeah.
Oh,
you're on the same wavelength, Shay.
He's also,
I don't like this lying. Stop erasing Ryan Choi.
Well, she's keeping more hidden.
Ryan Choi, but she's just lying, you know, that she got it from the Flash Museum.
Yeah.
When Ryan Choi, not who Ryan Choi.
He's also pretty sure that crisis will happen, Barry will still disappear, but that Iris will be pregnant with twins instead of just Nora, which is a popular theory that's going around. And since Nora is from 28, he wonders if it has anything to do with the Legends timeline where metahumans are banned. But I personally think maybe the Legends just broke time so much that this changed, because it doesn't seem like Nora comes from a place that bans metas, or else, like, why have a Flash Museum and why would she be the protector of Central City if that was the case, you know?
Right. See, I used to have that same theory as Shang, and now with the episode, I don't anymore. Unless, of course, like, no, because she said she was a protector, so no, never mind. Yeah. I'm lying to you. Sorry, Shang, we're wrong.
But I mean, like, they could still be like outlaw heroes, because that's, you know, that's never stopped Oliver from.
That's true. Technically, being a vigilante is illegal. So yeah, and the museum could always be like a, you know, a cautionary tale type museum.
That's true.
Like. a flash museum, and then he disappeared and died. If you have sex, you will get pregnant and die. So,
but in the newspaper article, they mention like a golden statue, don't they?
Yeah, well, they have they have other statues also that they don't continue to do.
Like, the last good hero, like, that's probably why she came back. Like, the Flash was the last good hero, and now all men are bad. And if only the Flash is back, then people start believing in heroes again.
There you go. Problem solved.
I like it. Finally, we have T, who is a first-timer sending feedback. So welcome to the feedback club.
Yay!
Her thoughts were a little bit on the more on the negative side. So for Black Lightning, she liked that Jennifer was shown accidentally using her powers on her mom and thought that Lynn seemed like the only one who was genuinely concerned about her, but she was frustrated. She liked that, but she was frustrated that it was Jefferson who came in to help her at the end of the episode because she felt like he was just detached from whatever was happening with his daughters. Yeah.
But I think with that, the thing, it wasn't shown, like, I get what she's where she's coming from, but I don't think it was shown to say that Jefferson is the only one that could help Jennifer. I think it was shown that way because, first of all, literally, he was the only one that could help her because his powers were designed to absorb her powers. But also, I think for Jefferson, it was to prove that he actually didn't know what he was doing with Jennifer. So I don't think it was something to, like, lift Jefferson up. I think it was something to actually confront Jefferson with the fact that he does not understand what to do with Jennifer. So, and hopefully that'll play out in, like, the next episode. And I think it might, because I think that's the one where she's going to the therapist or whatever.
Yeah, but
I think that scene was shown basically to prove to Jefferson that Lynn was right, and he doesn't know how to help her, so... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. I agree. And then she loved Foudy being badass and Tobias's 15 seconds of screen time and wonders if there was always this much cursing on the show, which I actually noticed there was a lot more in this episode than in previous episodes. And then shout out to Henderson for finally figuring out Jefferson's secret by himself. So yay, yay Henderson. And for The Flash, she liked Wally and Ralph, but disliked Nora, interestingly enough. The reason being the way she was towards Iris, and also that she doesn't act like a woman her age, but instead like a teenager. She doesn't want to see Iris hurt and thinks Barry shouldn't have run off to have a father-daughter time after he'd seen Iris's tears on the balcony earlier. And her other dislikes include no one showing Cisco any genuine concern and seeing both him and Iris in any kind of pain.
Aww.
I know. I think a little bit of tension is okay in this case, because it's much less than I think we all thought it was going to be. And I think that in terms of, like, Nora's attitude towards Iris, I don't think it's, like, cold or hateful or anything like that. She's just, like, prefers not to openly engage with her the way that she does with her dad. And, like, for me, the way that she acts with Barry is, like, very... he's her hero because she doesn't know him. So there's a lot of excitement there. And I can understand that because she doesn't know him very well.
And I think we'll get into it later when we actually go through the episode. But it's kind of like a protection thing with Nora, mm-hmm. with her mom, in the sense that, because there are times where you can see, like, you know, she wants to connect with her mom, or she finds something about 2018 Iris that was different than what she expected. Mm-hmm. Her experience with her mom in 2048, but it's kind of like, you know, she doesn't want to open up all of the way because she's still got that, you know, bias from the present. And then with Barry, she is kind of childlike because, like, it's like going back to being a kid because her dad is here and, you know, he's her hero and all this kind of stuff. And because he never was there, she has this, like, rose-colored glasses of who he is and, you know, And if she's got a limited amount of time in the past, she basically said, you know, like, I live with my mom my whole life. I've never been with my dad. So, you know, she's going to, like, shift all the available time that she has over on that side. So.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So that's it for feedback. Thank you so much, everyone, for sending all your thoughts. Please just do more of that. We love hearing from you. And this week we're back to our side A and side B format. So we will recap the shows very briefly, discuss what we liked and didn't like, and then crown a lady with gumption of the week. And we will start with side A, out of order / thank you for your cooperation. And I will hand it over to Jess, who will be our lovely host.
Yay! So the recaps are going to be a little bit different this season, and the idea that we're not going to do them all the way. So, you know, it's a lot of, it's time consuming to do them. And basically, you know, the podcast is not live. So if you have not watched the episode, then you can pause it and watch it and come back. So the recaps are just going to be like the synopsis, basically. So for the Flash 501, Nora, the recap, the summary for the episode is, you know, after unexpected guests from the future, Nora West Allen, appears at their home, Barry and Iris must figure out a way to get her back to the future without disrupting the timeline even more than she already has. Team Flash must work together to send Nora back while simultaneously fighting off another villainous meta, which we learned is Gridlock, and his powers are absorbing kinetic energy, so every time he gets hit with something, it makes him stronger. So how do you fight a villain that gets stronger every time you hit him? Obviously, Nora is very, very excited about her dad and not so excited about her mother. And Caitlin figures out something about her past with the help of Ralph. So that is, in a nutshell, what you missed on The Flash. Getting into our likes and dislikes, what did we like about this premiere episode?
I'll go. I think this episode served up all the feels in the best way possible. Like, I think I teared up in a couple of instances, which I haven't done since season 3, to be honest. And seeing Jessica Parker Kennedy finally interact with Barry and Iris as Nora was so fantastic. And we got confirmation that the whole West Island family has chemistry now with each other. And it didn't stop Nora at Nora looking like her parents, which I loved. And I loved the jitter scene with Iris and Nora because it was so layered. You can tell Iris is excited, disappointed, and sad all in the span of like 2 minutes. And maybe it's in her intuitive nature or her sudden maternal instincts, but she knows there's something wrong or she senses something's off. And Candace really sells all of these emotions in this scene. So I like some angst, so I'm not upset about the storyline, and it's clear that her emotions are going to be explored, and I like that she got to express why she's excited to have Nora around and how much it hurt that she didn't connect with her the way that Nora did with Barry. And it's just all so heartbreakingly beautiful. Barry's back being the center of the show, so yay! I love that all the family members were clearly the heart, and it's the direction.
You got his show back from Ralph.
Yes. And I love that all the family moments were clearly the heart, and it's the direction that the story will focus on the most. And I understand why Barry didn't want Nora to be in the present, but love how that all changed when he found out the truth. Like, he didn't get to fully grow up with one of his parents, and you know, or both of his parents, really. And you know he's gonna give Nora that chance to do that. And the vault scene, well, first of all, nothing ever good happens in the vault scene. It's now officially the vault of tears, right? Pain, and shock. So when Grant started to cry, I felt like my throat close up. And not like I didn't know this would be the story, but it suddenly felt too real all of a sudden. And Barry always, always expects to come home. And it's a promise like he has in a song for Iris. And, you know, it's just this like theme. And now that he knows he's not going to make it back, it just like guts you in your soul. So it's such a solid performance in that scene. And then Jessica Parker Kennedy brought a new energy to the show. All of her emotions were so believable. And she acted accordingly in every scene. And I think most telling was in the way she fangirled over her dad, but still didn't want her mom to be disappointed and still wants her approval, like the little girl that never quite grows out of wanting to make her parents proud. And I really felt that. And she's so full of life that it's so easy to fall in love with her, like the best part of both of her parents. And that balcony scene when Iris says they got their happy ending after all broke me. So like, just give them their happy ending, writers, please. I just need that. I love me some drunk Cisco, and even Ralph, who frustrated me to no end last season, made me genuinely laugh. And I think his character works better on the sidelines rather than in the spotlight, and I hope he stays there. I also really, really love the three speedster team up and how that whole scene, action scene, was executed. And finally, I don't think Grant was lying, because this was the best premiere since the pilot. It had the same feel to it, and also the start of like a new chapter in Barry and Iris's lives. So I think it's really fitting.
I love these feelings.
Yeah.
They are all good feelings.
You have feelings, Poppy?
I also had feelings. I thought that it was an excellent premiere episode, and probably their strongest is the pilot. everything, like, all things Nora exceeded my expectations. Like, so it was like, I guess it was worth going through all those weeks of freaking out that Nora was going to be horrible and hateful to Iris, and Iris was going to do nothing, and Candace had left the show, and whatever. Because we actually got way more interactions than I thought, and a lot more nuance than I thought. And thank goodness for that. It was great to see how Nora was, you know, keeping things, obviously, not just from her family, from her dad, but even, like, from the audience, right?
Yeah.
Which Jessica will talk more about. So it was cool, like, reversal of expectations, flipping the script kind of situation. And her opening really laid out the theme of legacy that the season's supposed to be all about, and, of course, about family. Jessica's performance specifically was really great. She, Grant, and Candace all really embody their characters down to the most minute details, which is really nice to see. Like that in the beginning when she's telling Iris, you know, like, oh, that's the nickname you gave me because you said that I do everything in excess, right? And she just has, like, a little head shake while she's talking about it that's, like, both, like, it's annoyed that her mom was saying these things, but also, like, affectionate towards her mom, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's just nice to see that, like, in her expressions and in her movements, if you will, whatever is going on with her and Iris, like, she acknowledges when her mom is right, you know, and she acknowledges how well her mom knows her while at the same time, you know, trying to avoid, like, another lecture from her, you know. So it felt very realistic. Of course, Barry and Iris had some of their signature speech scenes, and they were as lovely as ever. I really loved Barry talking about how he wanted to hold on to kind of, like, the traditional family timeline, right? Like, he just wanted one thing in their lives to just go the way that it was supposed to go. Whereas at the same time, Iris is just like, well, hey, listen, the fact that you're even here for more than a week at a time is a miracle in and of itself. So let's just enjoy our child and spend as much time with her as possible, please. So I don't know. I felt like it was very in character for both of them, and also very, very bittersweet. Speaking of bittersweet, the time vault scene where Barry realizes that he's left Iris alone again, even though he promised he would not do that anymore. And of course the irony that he thought that his daughter's presence would mess up his future, but instead his absence messes up his daughter's future. Aww. Super sad all the time. And at the same time, you know, like, because Iris is upset because she thinks that she's not getting along with her daughter, but she doesn't know the truth about what's going on there. Barry was upset that Nora was here because he doesn't know the truth about what's going on. And then Nora, probably, we don't know, but Nora's upset about a lot of things that she does not know the truth of, and we'll find out soon. So it's cool that you can see, like, it's rare that you see everyone's perspective so well, I think. A lot of times we're left frustrated because certain perspectives are cut out, and usually that perspective is Iris's, and it didn't feel that way this time, for once. So, amazing. and yes, okay, another thing that I loved, like, when Barry was super upset about missing all Nora's firsts, and then he's there for her first phasing. So cute.
Oh, tears. Like,
yeah, exactly. It's that first phase. Exactly. You know, drunk Cisco and tryhard Iris were two examples of how I think the show can and should incorporate humor into their storylines without getting too cheesy or getting too immature. Like, it's based on character development, right? Cisco is drunk because he said about Cynthia, and he did not expect to have his brain to be on, right? And so while, you know, we can talk about the ways in which they use Cisco for comedy and don't actually delve into him as a character, at least that is comedy based in his character. We understand why Cisco is doing this. It actually furthers him as a character, even while it is hysterical. And same with Iris and her shway. Just Iris trying super hard to make Nora, you know, care about her or like her. Because it's like, it's embarrassing. It's just like, it's like your mom trying to be cool. But it's because she feels like there's a disconnect there. And so you feel her pain even while you're laughing. Which is perfect. That's how it should be. Jessica will talk about her trash son. But he was used appropriately and sparingly, exactly how I like. I like it. And I like that, you know, for once, the layman of the group isn't a West family member, right? The person that's, like, asking, like, wait, what's going on, is Ralph. So, perfect. Now we know they're not racist. They just hate everyone who's not a scientist, including Ralph. So, meanwhile, Nora and her future name drops and her slang was all perfect. Obviously, I love Shui and the existence of Ryan Choi, which I've already mentioned. But when she name dropped that, I was suddenly I was like, I love the suit now. I've never said a bad word about this suit.
I never said about the suit.
Exactly. Anyway, finally,
she's like, Tati, a known suit stan.
Exactly. Exactly. Ralph's concern for Caitlin was surprisingly sweet. I really like how she tempers him as a character, and I liked how they kicked off her frosty family mystery. In general, I thought the Scooby Gang was used well, like, as in Ralph, Caitlin, and Cisco, you know, now, like, the new Team Flash, are just kind of, like, you know, on the sidelines, if you will, but getting their important moment. So they're not taking over, and they're not just, like, being used extraneously for unnecessary exposition. They're there when they need to be, and then they're getting little character moments that are important. The end.
Yeah, I like that, too. I agree with y'all, obviously, that this was a great and a really solid premiere episode. And I love Nora opening and closing the episode more than just the fact that she got to do it. So, and part of that was her paralleling Barry's pilot intro about, you know, she lost her dad to something impossible and then she became the impossible. I thought that was a really cool callback. But also because of how her story changed slightly from the beginning to the ending after you figure out that she's lying and why she's actually there. So like Tati said that, you know, we find out that Nora's not only lying to characters in the show, but she's also kind of lying to the audience. Because at first she was like, you know, I am, you know, the guardian of Central City and I'm living up to my dad's legacy and everything is good. I'm just going to like, I still got a long way to go though. And then by the end, she's like, yeah, I'm going to do my best to live up to my dad's legacy. And that's why I came to the past and stopped him from disappearing at all. Like, well, that is a little bit different from what you told us that you were going to be doing, Nora. So I do like that a lot, actually. I thought Jessica Parker Kennedy is amazing as Nora. I love the little, actually, I guess this was kind of what T was talking about when she was saying how, you know, she seems a little bit childish or childlike. But I actually, like, love those little inflections that she puts in her voice.
Mm-hmm.
Talking to, like, Barry, because it gives her, like, a youthful, bubbly feel. Because IRL, Jessica is older than Grant and Candace, but she's playing younger to the same age. And then, so she's got to have kind of, like, a youthful feel to be believable as their child. But also, again, like I was saying, the fact that she's meeting her hero dad for the first time. She's kind of like this youthful, bubbly feel. Like when he's asking about her name, she's like, after your mother. And it's like that little, like, soft inflection is really cute. She's so bubbly and excited and just like a super nerd about all things Barry. Like, she is definitely a stan. Going like detailed about all his previous battles, how much time she spent at the Flash Museum, right down to like, oh, is this a tech advice? She sounds like those nerds, like, when you go to, like, conventions or you see in, like, shows when they're talking about, like, really, like, nerdy people. There's, like, oh, yeah, episode, you know, 4, 365, and alternate universe, da-da-da-da, and, you know, this comic issue, number 1, page 37, panel 2. You know, like, going into, like, so much detail about all of Barry's exploits. She's just, like, super, super nerdy. And it's, like, you can understand, like, I don't blame Iris for feeling some type of way because Nora's obsession with her dad would give anyone, like, a complex. I loved how stressed out Barry was about Nora's whole presence. Like, she's, like, the annoying kid sister that Barry never knew that he didn't want. Like, he's getting in the way. She's touching all his stuff. She's in his lab. She won't stay put. Like, he tells her to stay, like a dog. Like, stay, good girl, you know? But she's, like, and he doesn't know how to deal with it. And then, like, on the other hand, you have Iris, who's the one that's trying way too hard, and Nora being the one that's with her. So it's like, you've got similar dynamics with Barry and Nora and Iris, but, like, the roles are flipped. So in Barry and Nora, it's Nora's the one that's, like, trying too hard, and Barry's like, And then with Nora and Iris, it's Iris the one that's trying too hard, and Nora's like, So I like that, both dynamics. The Jitter scene was, like, really cringy, but also, like, kind of hilarious. And while Nora and Iris are strange, you can tell that there are little moments where she still wants to be connected with and loves her mom. Like, the fact that, you know, when Iris mentioned the blinking game, she's like, really? Like, you're okay? You're not upset or worried like dad is? And Because I think that was something that she thought, like, her mom would just be like, no, I don't want to know anything, don't say anything. So to see that her mom is actually curious about it, I think that kind of piques Nora's curiosity a little bit, you know, and the fact that she offered up, you know, the coffee being $43, you know, she's kind of, like, she's trying to connect, but she's a little bit, you know, got this protective bubble around her. And it's kind of weird that Nora's withdrawn from her mom the same way that Barry is withdrawn from her. So it's like she really is her father's daughter. But then we later see with Barry and Iris's conversation about why he's so hesitant and why he wants that traditional family timeline. And then it's talk with Nora in the vault scene about why she's so excited to be with him and, you know, because he doesn't come home. Like, everything, everybody's perspective makes a lot of sense. Barry feels like Nora being there took away from him some normalcy in his abnormal life. And then soon, I hope, we will learn how Nora feels like Iris is keeping her from the only thing connecting her to her father by either not approving of Iris. We will learn how Nora feels like Iris is keeping her from the only thing connecting her to her dad. So, like, either Iris not approving of Nora using her powers or not approving of her changing the timeline to bring her dad back. So one of those things, I feel like, will be the reason, like, the true origin of the tension between her and her mom. And so you can clearly see, like, all three family members of the West Allen family, their point of view. And you feel for all three of them equally. Because you get why each person is, like, hesitant or feels bad, and you feel for all of them. So, like, Jessica Parker Kennedy, Grant, and Candace all gave really beautiful and, like, nuanced performances. You have, like, a West Allen family unit that can act, y'all.
Woohoo!
All of them act. The parents talk and the daddy-daughter talk were easily, like, two of the best scenes of the episode. My garbage son, Ralph, has become a fully functioning member of society that doesn't insert himself in the main storyline and unnecessarily hogs screen time. So, you know, go for him. It's kind of funny that people are like, oh, I didn't mind Ralph so much. I'm like, yes, garbage son.
That's what we want.
Garbage son now. he can
promote him to garbage boss.
Yeah. He contributed a little bit of comedic relief here and there to break the tension when it was needed, and then he bounced until he was needed again. So I feel like that's what works for him. And I even like the introduction to the Killer Frost mystery with Ralph bringing up the death certificate to Caitlin. It's just like the right amount. I like the team up with the Spacer team up with the vibe assist. Everyone had a specific task. No one felt extraneous, like they weren't just suiting up to suit up. And no one, with the exception of Gridlock, got knocked out. So it was a win for all of the heroes. The phase lesson on the plane was probably round up my top three best scenes in the episode. Because it was just a brilliantly written and directed callback to season one. With, you know, Eobard coaching Perry, who's coaching Nora in the present. And it just worked seamlessly in the episode. And further, this whole circle of life type aspect with Barry and Eobard that I have a theory about that I will share later when we get to the theory portion of this podcast. So I'm going to cap it off right there, and we're going to go switch over to what we did not like about this episode.
Ooh, I forgot to mention that one of my likes was that Flash interacting with, like, the Central City citizens. He's like, oh, Flash, old school Sue. And he's like, yeah, that was really cute. Oh, but not to dislike. So this is not a dislike per se, but I was a bit surprised that Cecile is keeping her powers, and I found it a bit hard to believe that no one knew about the Star Labs lounge. Like, don't these people have blueprints of the building? Do they only hang out in three rooms? And I still wasn't satisfied with the way they're writing Wally out again, if only because he barely got to be in the episode, and then they use the excuse that he still needs to find himself, and we'll go back to the legends, except we know that he won't be on the show, so what is the truth? And then I think Joe and Cecile weren't used so much, and that was a bit of a bummer, but at least we got a cute Joe and Nora moment, and that was adorable. And I only hope that Cisco will have a real story this season, and it won't be just supporting everybody else all the time. But that's it. The episode was, like, near perfect.
I agree with, you know, all those points, pretty much. Like, if I had to pick a dislike, it would be Cecile still having her powers, just because I thought that it was kind of like one of the sillier storylines in season 4, and I would like to erase all reminders of silliness in season 4. But I do think it poses an interesting moral dilemma for her at work. Like, mind reading would give her a seriously unfair advantage in the courtroom, but maybe she's using it for the greater good, since her job is to put bad guys away, right? So, like, does she try to avoid reading minds, or does she then use mind reading to lawyer better? I would watch that show.
So, I mean, how would she give, like, if she read a criminal's mind about where, you know, he stashed something, like, how would she legally to get to that point?
Right, like, legally, right, it would be like telling police officers to search in a, if it's a place they can legally search, right?
Right.
Just tell them, you should check here, right? And then they can check here to get better evidence. Or, I mean, just knowing how to phrase the question so that you can get the right answer from them, right? Surprising them with a question that's going to throw them off guard, and then get the way that, like, Elle Woods would do. She has the advantage of reading the mind beforehand. So anyway, I should point out that Gridlock was super boring and lame as a villain. But I didn't even think about Gridlock while I was watching the episode, so clearly it's not like a dislike, but he could stand to be more interesting. So there's that. And then finally, the lack of Wally, considering that he's only going to be in 3 episodes a season, was very sad. I would have liked to get a little bit more from him, but more, not more importantly, more like in continuity, I would have liked a firmer explanation about him not going back to Legends. Because the way that it was written, it made it sound like he's going back to Legends. Mm-hmm. But we know he's not. So it would have been nice for him to be like, yeah, but it's not, the Legends aren't it either. You know, I gotta just be a tree, find myself.
Go to another city out. And figure myself out.
Be like a tree and leaf. Sorry.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like, well, you know, another one of my dislikes is my interconnection fucking up right when the episode started. I did not like that. I had to call Tati and Skype me into the episode. That was not fun. But otherwise, I didn't think there was much not to like about the episode. And I agree with you. I did think Wally, Joe, and Cecile were underutilized, but particularly Wally, just because he is a speedster, and it's a storyline of a baby speedster coming in. So, like, the team-up was great, but I feel like Wally could have been utilized, or Nora and Wally could have been interacted a little bit more. Because I guess I'm just, like, reminded about Young Justice when Bart showed up and Bart being faster than Wally, and Wally being like, who is this kid, you know? And I wish we could have had some kind of something with Nora and Wally on the show. Of course, Iris being sad makes me sad. And I feel like the sooner Nora stops lying about why she's there, and, you know, because I, you know, the next episode, they'll show that he doesn't come back. And I think it's, you know, a little bit further, and then we get Nora to confess that she's actually there to stop Barry from disappearing at all. So, like, the sooner that she can do that, then the sooner Iris can realize that Nora's preference for Barry isn't because she doesn't love her mother. It's because she never knew her father. And then the sooner that Nora can realize that 2018 mom is actually Barry Shway and will, like, most definitely be on board with Nora's, like, screw the future plan, the sooner that they can, like, reunite and get together, and it'll be all, like, one perfect happy family. So if we can, like, speed that up, please and thank you. Like you guys, I liked Jerk Cisco this episode because I thought that it worked for where Cisco's character was, and it provided some comedic moments in this episode, but I hope that it won't be like a continuing trend so that he's just like drunk Cisco all the time, because I know the writers won't really address it in any real way or go into why he's drinking so much and all that kind of stuff. And just use it for comedy, and I would rather not have that. I would, you know, it worked for this episode because it provided context of where he is, and now I'd like him to move on to something else. So
yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
speak the truth.
Predictions, big predictions for.
I think the you should episode. Just do your prediction first because it's a whopper.
Yeah, you have the biggest predictions. Ours were like, yeah. So.
Okay, so I have, like, two big theories. One is, like, if anyone is remotely interested in Caitlyn at all for any kind of reason, I think that, you know, her Killer Frost family storyline could actually be interesting this season. Just with the fact that at the end of the episode, Ralph told Caitlyn about the fake death certificate, and it was signed by Cameron McCaunt, who in the comics is Icicle Jr. And so why name drop Icicle Jr. unless there's also an Icicle Sr.? You know, so Earth 2 Killer Frost mentioned that she had a brother named Charlie that died. Earth 1 Caitlyn doesn't think she even had a brother. But then again, Earth 1 Caitlyn also thought that her dad was dead. So what does she know? Earth 1 Caitlyn may well be related to Jon Snow because she knows nothing. but, like, and I don't even know if they're still, if even the writers remember Charlie. But if she does have a brother and he and her father disappeared from Caitlyn's life at an early age, it could set up, like, an Icicle Sr., Icicle Jr., Killer Frost, cold villain family thing that could be, like, the single most interesting thing that the writers have ever done with Caitlyn, like, ever. So that could be something. I just, yeah, because, like, Jor McCaunt is Icicle Sr., so they could have easily just name-dropped Icicle Sr. and had that be that, but the fact that they did Jr., it's kind of got, like, my spidey sense tingling a little bit. But then the more interesting theory that you probably all care about is about Nora. Why are you always lying, Nora? Oh, my God. Stop lying. Basically, I think Nora is still lying about some details, namely, like, what exactly her big mistake is and where she got the flash ring from. Like, I think she, Ryan Choi, and she also named drop Garth. That's one of the things I forgot to mention in my likes, all the little name drops and Easter eggs in an episode. She mentioned Lightning Lad and how her dad's lightning bolt is so much cooler than his. But which makes me think that, you know, they constantly tease each other and argue about this in the future. So I think she, Ryan Choi, and Garth, who is Lightning Lad, are all part of the Legion, or a Legion-like superhero team in the 31st century, and that maybe things are so bad right now in the future that they came up with a plan for Nora to go meddle in the past a little bit to save her dad, like change little parts of the timeline to bring her dad back. And then, because I remember that Todd Helbing was saying that whenever she went, she didn't stay in the past consistently. She went to the past, did some stuff, and then came back to the future, went to the past, came back. So I think the last time that she came back, probably after the satellite thing, she went back and had Ryan make her dad a suit because the old one got destroyed fighting satellite. And so he created the flash ring and the Adam-sized suit to fit into the ring so she could carry it with her when she went back to the past. She said she got it from the Flash Museum because they know that she's a nerd and she used that as a cover. So I don't, because, like, if Barry disappears in 2024, then that means that Ryan Choi would have to, like, show up sooner, like, before he disappeared, and I don't think that's the case. So,
right.
Yeah. They're all in cahoots in the future.
They're all in cahoots!
And then my third and smaller theory about Mr. Miles' curator, and Shane brought this up in his email as well. It's like we're on the same wavelength, and he probably has the same idea that I'm having. But I've seen some people theorize that Nora might be the new face of the Reverse Flash because, you know, she can reverse time a little bit and the whole, like, negative tachyons thing. And while I obviously think that this is ridiculous, like, Nora is not Reverse Flash. She's Nora. She's a tornado twin. So I think that people trying to make her be evil is ridiculous and has other motives of not wanting Wes Allen family or the couple to work out in the future. So I think that part's ridiculous, but I won't rule out that Nora may have unknowingly met Reverse Flash in the future, and that Eobard, Miles' creator is Eobard, and he kind of, like, helps and nudge Nora in the right direction the same way that he did Barry. So, Miles is Eobard. Nora spends all her time at the Flash Museum. She knows Miles on a first-name basis, and because she's so obsessed with Barry, I'm sure that she blurted out details in her conversations with Miles that only one other person that's obsessed with Barry would know, and that'd be Eobard. So, like, going into this whole chicken egg of it all, what if, like, Nora, whenever she goes back to the future, describes, like, in one of her talks with Miles, what it feels like to phase And, you know, the whole speech that Barry gave her, she tells Miles, who eventually becomes Reverse Flash. She travels back in time to kill Barry's mother, who, you know, then gets stuck in the 21st century and has to recreate the particle accelerator explosion to turn Barry into the Flash, who then has to, like, teach Barry how to develop his powers and, like, how to phase. So, you know, like, what if season one, Eobard teaching Barry how to phase is how he only knows that because Barry said it first to Nora, who told it to him, who went back in time and told it to Barry. So it's like this whole like circle of confusion and all that kind of stuff. So, yay!
All right. Did we all catch that? The circle of life. Okay.
Timey-wimey.
Yes, very timey-wimey.
I'm definitely here for the Miles is Eobard theory. I love it. And so I definitely like that more than Nora is Eobard.
Yeah.
So I will agree with that one. I don't. A huge conspiracy in the 31st century to bring back Barry in order to stop the timeline from going super wonky is very interesting. I don't know if it'll do it, but I would watch that show if they did do it. So my actual prediction is the same one it always is, which is just that we're going to need more diapers, came from Dawn's creation upon Nora messing with the timeline enough to give herself a twin brother. And also, you know, Wally's talking about fixed points, soft points, whatever. Barry disappearing in 2024 must be a fixed point because it's happened in every timeline so far. But him staying gone does not necessarily have to be a fixed point. And May will also feel this way.
Yes, I will. I also think that, my God. Well, I was going to disagree with you about something.
What?
Oh, wow. First disagreement.
With Jessica or with me?
No. It was not a disagreement. It's just a different thought, different theory, not a disagreement. Let me rephrase that. Sorry. I mean that I already think, my theory is that I think that Dawn is already, he already exists. Because when she was talking to Barry in the time vault, she kind of paused when she was saying that it was just her and her mom. And I think that there is, she already has a brother, but we don't know what's going on with him. So I still think he's already alive. Well, my other theory, which I agree with Tati, well, I expand on, I guess, is that Barry's disappearance in the future obviously was what happened. And then it ties back into the pilot since we know he's fighting Reverse Flash when he disappears in the future. I think that when he returns to the past to stop Reverse Flash from killing his mom, he gets stuck in the Speed Force and never returns. Because we see that Flash save young Barry, but we never find out what happened to him. And I also think that with the changes in the timeline happening now, Barry will obviously return much sooner than 25 years. So, yay.
Yes. I agree with this. I've always thought that Barry disappearing in 2024 is Barry going back to stop Eobard from killing his mom, slash from killing him as a child or whatever. Mm-hmm. The only question then is why doesn't, like, what is so big that he can't come back? Like, why can't he come back? Mm-hmm. And what happens to him when he doesn't come back? You know, like, how is he stuck in the Speed Force, et cetera? So those are the questions that I would have.
Yeah.
I thought my whole thing was I just assumed that Barry being disappearing in 2024 was him, like, going back and as lightning and striking himself. Like Barry is the reason that Barry became the Flash, you know?
Yes. Also very possible.
This makes me want to go back to watch the pilot and see, because we see Barry being left on the street, and I need to go with my eye and, like, take a peek.
Well, in the meantime, let's hop over to another lightning-powered show, Black Lightning. Like, the transition. So, in season 2, episode 1 of Black Lightning, we've got Jefferson Pierce and his family. They may have survived Tobias's attack, but they're not out of the woods yet. They're literally out of the woods, but not figuratively out of the woods. Concerned for the safety of Garfield's students, the board considers a motion to shut down the school, forcing Jefferson to go to Napier Frank to sway the vote. Jennifer is struggling with her powers, and her actions have unforeseen repercussions. Meanwhile, Anissa finds a way to get back to Freeland. And lastly, Lang continues her quest, much to the dismay of Agent Odell from the ASA. So, this is like, you can basically think of this episode as a series of showdowns. And Consequences was the, Sesame Street word of the day in Black Lightning was consequences. Because every showdown ended with a consequence. A lot of them revolved around Jefferson with the school board, with Lynn, with Henderson. Jennifer had some unforeseen consequences with her powers and the relationships in her life. Lynn had to deal with some consequences with the name of Agent Odell, basically. And Anissa is off playing Robin Hood and beating up thugs to steal money for a church. So that, all of that. Oh, and Cara Fowdy also had some consequences and dealt out some justice. So, well, not justice. She's saving her own ass, but still. What did we think about this episode? What did we like?
Starting with the episode with the news footage, you know, the police killing was really painful but powerful, and I liked how they didn't just show the reality of it, you know, on the news screen, but they also showed the reaction of the community, and that was something that reverberated throughout the episode. And it even came back with the kid resurrecting. So now we know, like we were talking about, we hope there's more resurrections, we hope there's, you know, more of the magic this season. So clearly there will be. So I liked that. And I liked how, you know, you already said the word consequences, how those consequences had ripples for all the characters throughout the episode. Like, even though I don't like that Jefferson has stepped down from his job, obviously I would like him to be principal because that makes him happy and because he's good at it. But it was good to see that there were real consequences for the events at the school, that someone has to answer for that. And that person is Jefferson. Because even though his powers are fantastical, he lives in a very realistic world, right? A very authentic depiction of present-day life. So it makes sense that he would have, like, something would have to happen because of that. It can't just be like, we can't just rebuild the school in a day and then gloss right. over the events the next episode. Like,
Flash.
Yes. Yeah, but, like, not just Flash. You know, like, any other, most yeah. other Supergirl shows would do it. Super, yeah. I just said Supergirl shows. I meant Super, you know what I'm saying. Anyway. but yeah, I also liked seeing, you know, Lynn going toe-to-toe in a professional sense against Agent Odell. I thought it was cool to see, like, it's a roadblock for her in doing her job, really, in helping the Greenlight kids the way that she can, right? I liked how passionate she was about doing her part, because, yeah, she doesn't suit up and fight, you know, kick people's literal asses, but she does save the day with medicine, okay? And they are not letting her do her job right now, so she is not going to allow that. I also liked her fights with Jefferson throughout the episode because they were so believable and so nuanced, and that it ended with her, you know, saying, like, she can still act without his support, right? She doesn't need it, but she wants it. So she wants yeah. him to be her. She wants him to be in this together, which I thought was really nice to see. Other things that are nice to see were a depiction of, you know, mental health issues, of wanting or needing therapy, and then having two different sides hash that out, right? Because it's not often that we see it at all. And obviously Jessica will have more to say about that, so she can say it. But Jennifer was the person in question who might need to go to therapy or not. And speaking of her, Chyna continues killing it in all of her scenes. So watching her struggle with her powers, you know, it's really painful to see, but at the same time, it's great that we're continuing with that storyline for her. It's not just like you put a bandaid over it. Now she's an awesome superhero with a suit and fighting alongside her family. Like, she can do it in the moment when she needs to save someone, when she needs to save her family members, right? Like, that's what really drives her. But it's still not the life that she wants, and she's still kind of torn about, she doesn't want to be a freak, right? She doesn't want to be, like, the people on the news, or, like when her friend Keisha was talking about how, like, oh, those people are freaks, I was like, oh, no, this is so sad, Jennifer! So... Because that's, like, her biggest fear, right? Is, like, right. being ostracized, being abnormal, and there's, she has no choice in the matter. That's what she is now, so it's so sad. But also, I thought that, what are other things that, the music is always amazing.
Oh, the music is great.
Mm-hmm. Yes, like, they never let me down on that front. And the choreography, like, the fight choreography, too. Like, even though there are, I will have negative feelings about some of the fights, but yeah. the choreography of those fights were very positive. So yeah, overall, I mean, I thought it was a really strong premiere, and And it was cool to see that they just, like, jump right in. Like, they just expect you to be able to follow with it, right? They didn't take time to sort of, like, build up the whole situation again. Because we remember what happened in the last season. So we didn't need to start over with a new plot or anything. And literally, we're all, like, all cylinders. You know what I'm saying? What is the phrase?
Firing.
Yes, all cylinders are firing. Thank you. Yep. Thank you. Okay. There we go. Those are my words.
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed Lynn and Jefferson's arguments as well. Like, they just felt so real, and they still very much love each other, but they're not seeing eye to eye. And for every one of Jefferson's reasons, Lynn had logical ones of her own in defense of whatever he said. And I love that she feels this responsibility for the Greenlight babies and helping them. And I was really scared for her, actually, in her scenes with Agent Odell. Like, I'm happy she held her own, but you can tell she's really ruffled by him, which is understandable because even I was terrified of him when he was speaking to her. I think he's a great addition to the cast, and it's great that Lynn is getting some story on the side for herself. And I love Foudian's Cyanide's fight. Choreographically speaking. and the music as well. And the whole thing was just like edge of your seat kind of action. And then when she took off her heels and then revealed that they were actually weapons, I was like shocked and amazed. I was like, oh, Foudy, I didn't know you had it in you. But part of what happened,
I really did not know.
The fact that we were so surprised by this is part of my dislikes, but that's a different story. Anissa stealing money from dealers and giving it to the church to help them get the Greenlight kids back was really inspiring. And even though she couldn't put on her suit, she was still trying to do the best thing the only way she knew how, and that was really admirable. I like that we also got to see what's been going on in the background with regards to the Greenlight kids and how they're being hunted down, and I think it paralleled real life really well and also moved along the story without taking precedence over it. I'm still very much enjoying Jennifer's story, and like that, even though she already has her powers, there are still new parts of her powers that she's discovering, and it's scary for her because she can't seem to control it. And then China Ann McClain's terror and emotion cuts really deep. And like the horror Jennifer had when she saw that she'd hurt her mom was so well done. And I'm glad she still has Keisha as a friend, though I'm not sure how much longer she does have her as a friend. but it's just like nice to see them having like, you know, normal teenage girl in the moments, like in the room or on the porch, and she's, you know, braiding her hair and they're talking and chit-chatting about stuff. It's really nice. And I also like the fact that Lynn suggests therapy for Jennifer as well, and that she in turn asks how everyone, Jennifer asks how everyone else was coping with all the events that have transpired, because she doesn't think that they're all okay either. And I think the conversation just surrounding it all felt realistic. And finally, Henderson discovering Jefferson was Black Lightning by the power of deductive reasoning was amazing. I felt really bad for him, and I thought the entire scene was really well done, though. Like, there was a lot of emotion, anger, surprise, and Jefferson was at a loss for words and truly affected by his friend figuring this out. And I just love that a character finally came to the conclusion regarding secret identity on their own. So it felt good to see Henderson take control of the situation and call Jefferson out for lying.
Yeah. I liked a lot about this episode. And one day I will learn how to say words. But I like the dynamic between Lynn and Creepy Al Roker. Like, Agent Odella. There's, like, so much tension. I love that she gets her own adversary this season. And he is sufficiently creepy. And Bill Duke, who plays him, has put all this, like, presence into the character. And he's just really, like, imposing and, it's great just seeing them go back and forth in the two scenes that they had. Because you know, like, he is not going to let up on Lynn, and he's going to just stay, like, on top of her and kind of, like, crowd her and stuff like that. So their dynamic will be really interesting to watch. Like you guys said, the realism of the episode, the incorporation of the news reports, the Black Lives Matter is still very much a part of the show. And it makes it, you know, with them accidentally thinking that they accidentally killed Issa by using excessive force. Like, all of that is, like, really gritty without being over the top. It's not dramatic. It's not preachy. It's just incorporated in a really realistic way, even though the circumstances are not realistic with, you know, superpowers and all that kind of stuff. It feels like it could happen in everyday life. So that was great. As much as I dislike that Foudy killed Cyanide, the whole choreography of that garage fight scene and the music was really excellent. She had on, like, this it's kind of like, I don't know if it was a throwback to like the blaxploitation days, because she had like what Fatty was wearing, this whole like silver 70s style like jumpsuit, and then like the music, it was all very, you know, 70s blaxploitation film, kind of really cool kind of fight choreography. I thought that worked really well, even though it was Fatty. Thunder also got an amazing fight sequence and soundtrack, taking down the thugs at the drug house. I thought that was really great seeing stylistically for Anissa with all of the fights. And I feel like her powers were even used, incorporated in a good way in that whole fight sequence. So that was good. The loss of like the Batman Detective Gordon dynamic between Jeff and Bill Henderson makes me sad. But I am glad, like you may, that he figured it out. And I'm also glad that Jefferson did him the courtesy of not lying to his face. So that was great. Yeah. Mostly about this episode, I loved all things Jennifer and her storyline. She was like so confidently using her powers in the season finale. I was like, oh, well, you know, she's going to be hitting the ground running and training with her dad and Anissa in season two. But contrary to what I was thinking, in this episode, I like that we still see that she's sees that they're more of a burden to her than a blessing, and how scary it is not knowing what's happening with her, not only for her, but also for her family that don't know how to help her. So I like that we're getting this story from her, because she's so different from Anissa and how Anissa reacts to her powers. I like that this storyline also allowed the writers to slip in mental health awareness and address the stigma that a lot of Black people have about therapy and going to therapy. Like, you know, you don't, the kind of general consensus is that keep it in the family. You don't talk to strangers about your feelings out there. Don't be, you know, spreading the business. Keep all of that kind of stuff inside the family. But between Lynn and Jefferson, because Jefferson was like, we're going to keep this inside the family. I can deal with it. I know how to do this. I have powers. And Lynn was like, you know, bringing up positive sides of Jennifer going to see a therapist, and that, you know, Jefferson can't handle it, even though he thinks that he can. Something is wrong with her and they don't know how to deal with it, and they need to look to other places to help their daughter, because just ignoring that Jennifer's stealing all this kind of stuff is not going to make Jennifer's powers any more controllable. You know, they've been trying and it's not like that. Like, Anissa was already kind of like ready made for her powers and, you know, accepted them already, so Jefferson really didn't have to do much. But with Jennifer, it's her powers have like a really like mental connection, and because her mental state is so messed up and fried and discombobulated and all over the place, her power is like coming out as her powers are the same way. The visuals of her powers are really beautiful, like when she's floating in her sleep and the like the protective energy bubble, little sad Jennifer in the bathroom, like the little bubble around her. Like, all of those are just gorgeous, like the lights and everything playing around. I love Jennifer and Lynn and Jennifer and Keisha scenes. They gave me like all the feels, because they're just like so sad seeing these relationships break down for her. And for Jennifer, the consequences that she deals with are consequences that are her own doing. Like, for Jefferson, on the other hand, like, a lot of Jefferson's messes in this episode were because Jefferson made choices, and those were consequences of those choices that Jefferson made. But Jennifer didn't choose to be have powers, and so it's kind of really sad that these consequences and fallout of relationships, like between her and Keisha, are over things that Jennifer had no control. So it's just it's really sad, but it's really like good storytelling and compelling and engaging, and it's really well acted from all of the women involved in the scenes. And not like I needed much prompting beforehand, because Jennifer has been my girl since day one, but I'm really invested in her growth and her success, and I'm happy it seems like the writers are invested in that as well. So that is all good stuff.
Aww.
Yeah. Things that we did not like about this episode.
Before I say the things I did not like, y'all's likes reminded me that I forgot to say I liked the church scene where Anissa drops off the money. I like their reaction to getting that money, and then also her being like, you don't have to, you know, you don't have to shoot me. I was like, oh, okay. It just felt like, I was like, okay, that's believable. I like, because at first, I guess it goes into my dislike. At first, I did not, like, I was confused by Nissa's storyline. I was like, why is that the thing that she chooses to do?
Yeah.
but then she, like, at the end of that little last moment where she was, like, being Robin Hood, I was like, okay, that's kind of cool. I like that. And obviously, I knew that that's what she was going to use it for, but I liked the actual scene of her doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I didn't, I thought that it was kind of weird. That, like, I was like, you could probably do some other things. You'd probably find some legal methods of fundraising. You know, like, but, I'm sure Thunder could be like, Thunder's hosting a fundraiser to get to make the money, you know?
But did she want to even reveal herself? I feel like that's why she just didn't wear her costume at all.
Yeah, no, she wasn't. Her.
Yeah, yeah. But shout out to Anissa's red outfit. That was just gorgeous. That's it.
and then the other thing that I forgot to say that I liked was, yes, I love that Henderson found out that Black Lightning is Jefferson on his own. So that's great. And I hope that that means that he's going to get to be more in the know. Dislike is that that's just another thing to add on to the pile of reasons that he may die. So,
oh, no!
Very concerned about you, Henderson. Please don't die. anyway, the other dislikes, I mean, there aren't very many because the episode is really good, but Foudy's, you know, I've never really liked Foudy's character. I don't really know how she fits. And so I feel like the writers also don't know how she fits, because now suddenly, instead of being like random annoying woman who's in love with Jefferson to like random woman working for the ASA for reasons, that still wants to protect Jefferson, to now being, like, woman who was, like, actually a spy for the ASA the whole time and is also, like, badass ninja warrior who can take out cyanide, was just like, wait, what? So it was very strange to see her in that way, even though the fight scenes were pretty awesome. And then at the end when she, like, rushes to Tobias, and I was like, whoa, was she really, like, because she was, like, super confident, and then she, like, rushes him and immediately fails. So I'm like, this, now you just look stupid again. Like, you were looking great, now you look really dumb. She seemed to have a whole plan, but she only had 12% of a plan, or not even 12% of one. So I'm just like, okay, well, fine. So I didn't like that. I don't know if there's anything else that I didn't like. I mean, I guess I could just continue to say I don't like that. I don't see Grace until I see Grace. and we've got the you know, those spoilers of when we'll next see Grace, and I don't like that. So yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
That's my dislike.
The official account was posted the picture of Anissa and the new girl, and I'm just like, am I supposed to be on board with this?
Yeah, excuse me, yeah. I will say, like,
a picture of, like, Grace, like, presumably reacting to Anissa.
Yeah, being upset.
Like, Grace Ballad, really? Really, Anissa?
Yeah. I don't like that cyanide is dead, just because I felt like we were, like, barely getting to know her, and I like her dynamic with Tobias. So I think that's kind of unfortunate, but at the same time, it's not like I'm not, like, attached to her. But if I had to pick between cyanide and Foudy, I would have to pick Foudy! Sorry. And then I guess maybe just, like, given that the what's in the box was, like, a question, I felt like we didn't get enough of the box or Tobias.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or maybe even, like, we kept hearing about the Green Light Kids, and, like, the fact that they're being, like, quarantined and kept away from their family members is upsetting, but I would like to sort of, like, get in there already. Like, I want to see what's going on in there. So, for me,
it felt like a premiere, but it also felt like part of a second episode, kind of like you were just dropped in and then just roll with it, you know? but like you, I didn't like that Foudy was just, like, when did she learn how to fight like that? When did she suddenly change her mind about working with the ASA? I think that we didn't have enough buildup with regards to why she was working with them to begin with. And so all of her actions in the premiere just threw me off. I like the fight scene, but agree that it's ridiculous for her to think that she could just go after Tobias like that. And like, like with what army? Like, she's just going to storm in and try to take him down. It's just a little bit crazy. And then I was a little bit upset that they killed Cyanide just because it was so quick. Her death had no major impact, and that bothered me. And it also leaves Tobias without anyone anymore after they killed off his sister last season. So it's like they're just slowly trying to get rid of Tobias's, you know, right-hand people. And then while I thought the conversations between Jefferson and Lynn felt realistic, I also didn't like Jefferson, that Jefferson didn't think she was capable of handling something like this on her own and used like the whole not having powers argument. But I liked that she fought back and basically said that she doesn't need his support, but she'd still like to have it. And I think that was important for her to say that to him. Finally, Gamby only being around for Foudy to confront him was kind of odd to me. Like, and Tobias only appearing at the end was even weirder, as I thought he'd have a bigger presence in the premiere. And then it was strange that no one was handling the emotional aftermath of season one except for Jennifer and Lynn, to an extent.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't like this pattern where we only see 15 seconds of Tobias per episode. Like, that needs to stop. Like, Lynn, let's not continue that into season two. I agree with you. I thought that he would have a bigger presence in the premiere than he actually wound up having. I'm also a little peeved. Like, I won't say that I was peeved, I was pissed that out of nowhere, Foudy, like, Car Foudy, is somehow now James Bond super spy and is able to not only go toe to toe with Cyanide but kill her. And we're not even like, I don't even think we were like 10 minutes into the episode and like Cyanide just like dies and like that's it. After we spent like so much, you know, like we weren't like super invested in her and all things about her life, but we did start to peel back some layers. And, like, the last one or two episodes about, like, her backstory and all that kind of stuff. So for her to just die all of a sudden, and then, like, whatever hope that I had for, like, a Lala-esque resurrection was dashed by Selena kill himself. I'm like, no, she's dead. And like, oh, well, that sucks, you know? Just, and from Foudy, of all people, like, that's probably, like, pisses me off the most. In the premiere, for, like, a fake-ass child kidnapping vice principal, you know, like... I don't know. I didn't like it. And I feel like maybe I would be less salty if Foudy's hidden talents were, like, less hidden in season one. But it just seems ridiculous that she suddenly has all these skills, you know? And I guess, like, what you were saying, Tati, that the writers didn't really know what they wanted her to be in season one. And so she just keeps getting these, like, level-ups with no really kind of build-up or, you know, explanation for them. So, yeah. And the fact that she just decided that she could go toe-to-toe with Tobias, you know. I don't think she was planning on, like, taking on Tobias. I think she was just there to, like, steal the briefcase and get out, but he was, like, waiting for her. But, like, the fact that she was, like, all cocky, like, well, you should have taken care of your girl and all this kind of stuff. I'm like, come on, boo. Hold on. Back up. Wait a minute. And she had, like, a harpoon. Like, he struck her with a harpoon through her stomach. And she's still, like, charging, and, like, how is she still alive? Like, she flew out the window, but, like, she should be dead, technically. If she's still alive, I have no idea what's going on with her. Like, is she, like, superhuman? I do not understand. Yeah. Also, I have to go on, like, a mini Jefferson rant.
Do it.
I did not like him that much in this episode. Specifically, I didn't like his conversation with Lynn about, one, about Jen seeing a therapist and him not wanting her to, because of the whole, like, you know, I can handle it, I have powers, I can teach her, da-da-da-da, him kind of, like, downplaying the need for therapy. I didn't like that conversation and how he was talking to Lynn about it. I didn't like his conversation with Anissa not to get involved with the Pod Kids anymore. You know, just... even though that the government is withholding these kids and from their parents, the let's just let the system do its job kind of thing. Like, let's be honest, like, Napier had a point when he called Jefferson selfish and arrogant. It's like, even from season one, like, his sphere of concern typically extends to his immediate family and his immediate interests. You know, like Henderson said, when Black Lightning showed up to the Seahorse Hotel in season one, it was to save Jefferson's daughters and no one else. And I remember thinking about that when we watched that episode, because, like, that hotel had more than just Anissa and Jennifer in it. There's all these girls that had been kidnapped and were staying there. And he got his daughters and didn't, like, shut the hotel down. So that was kind of, or he didn't go there specifically for all the other girls. He just went there for his daughters. And then that was it. And then as soon as he found out that Tobias was alive, his singular focus became so consuming on, like, fighting Tobias that he almost, like, destroyed himself. The ASA experiments have been exposed and the Pod Kids still need help, but now Jefferson wants to play by the rules. He wasn't playing by the rules last season, but he wants to play by the rules this season because he's too busy focused on finding Tobias Whereas in this is trying to, like, well, we still, like, we expose the problem, but there's still a problem there. We still have to do something. Keeping Lynn from getting involved because she doesn't have powers, and, you know, taking Agent Odell's side of all people over his ex, in parentheses, wife. They're living together. They're sleeping in the same bed. He's basically his wife. And he's like, oh, you should be a, you know, I'm exaggerating, but, like, you should be a good woman and stay out of, you know, this situation.
Oh,
that's yeah. how it came off to me. Like, you know, the men is right. Listen to us. Stay out of the way kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so I like that she pushed back against that. It was like, you don't tell me what to do. You know, like, you can't tell me what I can do for, can and can't do for my work. I like that she pushed back on him because of that. But I didn't like that whole, like, argument from his side in the first place. He doesn't want to see Jennifer see a therapist because he thinks he can fix her. Like, all of these things, like, he tries to take on, like, all of these things by himself. The fact that he thought that he could be both Black Lightning and the principal, but him being Black Lightning and the principal brought the 100 gang to his school, brought Tobias to his school, and he's still, like, trying to hold on, thinking that the school board will just, like, blow off and let out some steam or whatever. Like, I know he's a good person, and this is not, like, a I Hate Jefferson fan club that I'm trying to start, but I just think it is an interesting character flaw. And it was one that he kind of had to deal with in the first episode by letting go of Garfield High, even though I know that was, like, painful for him to do, and letting go and realizing that he cannot help Jennifer the way that he thought he could. So I thought it was an interesting kind of way that the writers did address it. It's not something that, you know, is just a character flaw that is accepted in canon. It's being, like, addressed. So I do like that part, but I just think, like, that part of Jefferson just really annoys me. So. Thank you for coming to my Jefferson hate.
Your TED talk.
Her Jeff talk.
Your anti-Jefferson tirade.
Right. Yes.
But yeah. You're not wrong. You're not wrong.
Yeah.
Anyways. Predictions.
Oh, well, this is, before I get into my prediction, I was just thinking about Henderson and whether or not he's going to tell Keisha to stay away from the Pierce family in general, even though he won't tell her, like, why. So that would be interesting. But I think my
he
prediction...
probably won't happen when she finds out that Jennifer has power.
Yeah. We'll see. I think that the way the mom reacted to Issa, like, Issa's mom, I don't know her name, coming back to life, has something to do with the magic that brought him back, because you could tell she was so shocked that she said those things out loud to him.
Yeah. I think that's his powers.
That's my only prediction.
My prediction is that you're right.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, because you could see, like, his powers flaring up when he was looking at his mom and she was saying all those things. So I think whatever Greenlight did to him, his power is, like, compelling people to tell the truth or something like that. So... with regards to Issa, I feel like it's probably going to be a race to see whether Team Tobias or Team Pierce find him first, because he is, like, on his own at the end of the episode. And I meant to put this in my likes, but I like how he is the first Greenlight kid that we see dealing with the fallout of his powers, and how that kind of paralleled Jennifer a little bit, that his relationship and circle of trust is just being, like, destroyed because his mom, like, didn't want anything to do with him when he came back. My money, though, on who will find him first is probably Tobias, just because Issa's a lost kid, rejected by his family, the law's hunting him down. It's an easy mark for someone like Tobias, who collects troubled orphan kids and kids with issues like cyanide and like Khalil. And corrupts them into assassins. So I feel like it'll give Tobias something to do. So I feel like that'll tie in that way. And also because I feel like I don't think that Jefferson is ready to take on all of the Greenlight babies yet in his storyline where he is. So I feel like Issa might go Team Tobias for a while. And then it'll be up to Jefferson to eventually save all of those kids from Tobias or from themselves or whatever. Also, like, if we thought that the new woman, I cannot remember her name, but there was that casting call for the woman that had the military background, and we thought that she was going to be, or I thought she was going to be Tobias' new Johnny Toledo and be, like, So he had two badass women, but now he has no badass women. So, most likely...
Yeah, what is with all the taking of the badass women? What is this?
This is, like, ridiculous. So most likely this new badass woman will be the new Cyanide and not the new Giant Toledo. Mm. So be curious to see how she's introduced and how long then she can stay alive. Being next to Tobias. So yeah. That's it for that.
That's yeah. True.
So that was side A with the Flash and Black Lightning. And now we move on to the Ladies with Gumption nomination portion of this side. So any kind of nominees for side A?
From Flash, I would nominate Nora West Allen, Baby Flash XS, because it takes a lot of gumption to go back in time and fake having negative speed force inside of you right? In order to, and then fake that you just want to spend time with your dad and have that work for him to mess up his own timeline just so you can chill for a little bit longer. But really, you're going to save his life without him even knowing about it. So.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to agree with that, but I'm also going to throw in Foudy's name.
Foudy?
Didn't I think it was T or it was the ID that also said that Foudy was laid with Gumption material.
Yeah, like,
I guess.
Because she had the balls to go after Tobias on her own.
She did.
I'm also going to throw Lynn into the ring.
That's who I would say for Black Lightning, yeah.
Yeah.
My legitimate Black Lightning nomination.
I'm sorry.
Lynn for going toe-to-toe with Agent Odell, for going toe-to-toe with Jefferson, and for standing up for her daughter and, like, you know, trying to help Jennifer work through, you know, her situation, even though she got hurt in the process. She didn't run away from Jennifer. She actually, even though she was scared for a minute, she went up and, you know, consoled her daughter afterwards. But mainly, I think, with the whole Agent Odell thing was, like, one of the best scenes for me from Black Lightning, you know, that dynamic and the fact that she went toe-to-toe, even went behind Jefferson's back and talked to Gambi to get him, to get her into there, like, to go over Agent Odell's head to get her back to where she needed to be. I thought that took a lot of gumption.
Right, so I guess we were going to choose between Nora and Lynn.
The question is, do we want to choose between them here? Because it's a little bit unfair, just because there's two on this side and only one show on the other side.
Oh, yeah.
So I feel like...
We can save it for, like, one, like, round off.
Yeah.
So, moving on to side B, which I just titled Fuck.
Fuck Batman.
I wasn't going to call it Fuck Batman, but it's just Fuck. Because basically, you know, I guess that also sums up the episode, like, fuck.
that would sum it up. That's the episode.
Yeah, I tried to look up the recap or the episode synopsis and I couldn't find it. But basically, it's a pilot. It's an introductory episode. You've got Raven, Dick, and Starfire are the three main titans in the storyline. Raven is having a lot of issues. Like, her mom has to keep her, like, literally locked up when she goes to sleep. But there's something, she knows there's something inside of her that is not good. And her mom's kind of scared of her. School life is hard because she's a teenager, and so that sucks. But it kicks off kind of when, and she's having these dreams of Dick and the Graysons and the tragedy that happened to him. So she's got things that seem very real to her, but she does not know how they all piece together. Until one day, some creepy man breaks into her house, forces her mom to tell her that she's not really her mom, kills her mom in front of her, and sends Raven on a cross-country road trip to she doesn't know where until she gets there, and she meets Dick, the detective, and asks for his help. Dick, on the other hand, just moved to Detroit, is trying to get a fresh start, doesn't like having partners or talking to people a lot, but his main thing is, like, helping kids out in situations. So meeting Raven, they kind of click because helping kids is what he does. And then on the other side of the world, you have Corey Starfire, who is waking up in Germany, has no idea where she is or who she is, but is kind of thrust in the middle of this mystery where there's people after her and she doesn't know why. They tell her that she's looking for someone. They know the girl that she's looking for, but she has no idea what's going on. And eventually she confronts the people that are after her and figures out that this girl, Rachel Roth, who is Raven, all the way back in the United States, is the girl that she's looking for. So that's the only clue that she has. And then at the end of the episode, you see, you know, a tiger in a video game store, and it turns out to be Beast Boy. And that's basically, in a nutshell, the Titans.
I like how you gave a real recap of that, because most people are not going to get DC Universe.
Well, I didn't have anything to go on, but basically it's just like intros for all of the characters, setting up the mystery for half of them. But what did we like about this premiere episode, or this pilot, actually?
I really liked the intro. Like, I think it was a good idea to just have Raven dream about Dick's past. It just felt more organic this way than just having a random flashback. And it also tells us they're connected somehow, and it's like a cool way to introduce some of Raven's powers. And I really thought Starfire's introduction was really good. Like, she doesn't remember anything about herself, but she's smart enough to trace her own path back to wherever she was before to find out answers. And I think the amnesia stuff adds a lot of mystery for her to discover and, you know, to discover things moving forward in her story. And it's like a good journey for her to have. And I love the hotel scene and the scene where she goes to speak to the head guy she apparently used to be in a relationship with, because she tells him she doesn't think she was in love with him. Like, I died. She wasn't even faking it. And then she just burns them to a crisp when they try to fight her. So it was so badass, even though she had no idea what she could do with her powers. I also like Raven a lot. She's scared of what might be inside her, and she faces a lot of trauma in the first episode following the death of her mom, but she still manages to persevere, and I think she gives a strong performance.
Yes. First and foremost, I liked the performances of Tegan Croft and Anna Dia. Mm-hmm. I think they did a really good job with the material that they had. I think that Tegan Croft is like weirdly beautiful. She's like a beautiful alien. I'm like, what is happening? So I really was impressed with her Raven, and I thought that Anna brought a really nice and refreshing quality to Starfire, especially like considering that her storyline is like, I don't know who I am, I don't know what's going on, and I'm obsessed with this random small child. It was like she really made it kind of like she's like sort of like laughing at herself and like the situation that she's in, you know, in a way that felt really realistic and injected a little bit of lightheartedness into an otherwise dreary episode / show. So yay for that. I also, what else did I like? I like that we do see that, you know, Dick is drawn to children in need, right? And that you can connect that to his own past, his own tragedy, and also the way that Batman changed his life, even though he is as ungrateful a son as Nora is, and is just complaining about everything that Bruce has done for him. So, that's fine, I guess. So you see that he's shaped by what Bruce has done in his life, even as he's, you know, rejecting that lifestyle. I thought that the choreography for the fights, even though like it was super dark, so it was kind of hard to see, but, you know, even when I'm like peeking through my hands, I could see that there was good choreography, like the baton, when you like hit the baton.
Yeah.
That was like really cool. I was like, okay. All right. Nicely done, guys. And I thought that Starfire's powers look good. Definitely better than Raven's powers had looked in the trailer. So yes, that was an improvement on the trailer. What else did I like? I did like that Raven's mom, like, actually cared about her.
Mm-hmm.
And mom. Because then they said it wasn't really her mom, but that was confusing because it seemed like it was her mom.
Yeah.
But I don't know what that means, but whatever. She did really care. It's like, it wasn't like she was, like, she wasn't being abused or anything. Like, you know, right. There was someone in the world that really did want the best for her and, like, want to help her through the shit that she was going through. And that's why it's, you know, her death is the event that leads Raven down this path, because now she has no one. So I thought that was really, that was poignant. And yeah, I thought that, like you guys, like you already said, May, like Starfire was really smart, you know, like she's able to trace her identity to this girl and then go, you know, go on her own little mission to find her. A mission that is so important that she does not even need to change her clothes. And I like, you know, a woman with a one-track mind. So,
great.
Yeah.
She didn't need to because she had her passport and everything ready. She's just like, eh, I'm just getting on a plane.
Yeah, no suitcase full of clothes. Like, when I saw that, I was so mad. This whole time, full of clothes in Germany, and she took none of them.
So, yeah, I don't know. I think, oh, okay, on a superficial note, Dick Grayson looks great shirtless. And I think it's about time. About time. We had a superhero who looks great shirtless. No, I'm just kidding. Obviously, there are plenty of them. That's what they're supposed to do. But he did it. So you go. And we got to see it in the first episode. And without, it wasn't, you know, like, not, he's not on a salmon ladder trying to show us how good he looks shirtless. He was just there looking good shirtless. Watch, so there you go.
Yeah.
Yep. That's
that. His butt shots. Not yet.
No, not yet. But they'll come. They'll come. Okay. Because there was one good butt shot that I was like, well, that is Dick Grayson. They did cast that appropriately. So, in case y'all don't know, Dick Grayson is known for his nice ass.
Yes, that is true.
All right. Someone else, take it on from me.
Like you guys said, I thought, like, Corey on it, yep, Starfire was really great. I thought it was kind of, you know, she's very, like, go with the flow. Like, she wakes up in a car crash and has kind of no clue what's going on. But, like, it's, she finds, like, these clues that lead her back. Like, she found one that led her back to the hotel, and she all of a sudden can speak German, apparently. and, you know, just the way that she kind of, like, goes with everything. And all, a lot of honest facial expressions, she's just like that, you know, laughing nervously, what the fuck, gif. Like, she doesn't know what's going on, but it's, like, kind of funny to her that she doesn't know. But she's going with it anyway. I like the first time that we actually see her powers, like, see her power up as Starfire. When the German guy was trying to kill her, like, he shot at her, and that... You can see, like, the slowdown from the bullet leaving the gun and the fire, and then that kind of fire, like, igniting her from within and coming out of her was really, really cool visually. I liked Raven more than I thought that I would like her based off of the trailers and based off of, like, what her story was supposed to be. And I guess that's thanks to Tegan and how she played Raven. And so I'm a little bit more invested in this whole, like, save Rachel from the creepy people that want to kidnap her all the time. So I'm definitely a little bit more invested in that because of her. I like with Dick at the precinct, how the precinct kind of, his relationships at the precinct, even they all know what he's like. They all know that he's a loner. But at the same time, there's still kind of like a family vibe there.
Mm-hmm.
That is kind of nice to see that he has like a team of people. That I do agree. I thought the fight sequence was really well choreographed, and I like the baton thing, and the whole fuck Batman came off better in the episode than it did in the trailer. So the way they cut the trailer just made him seem like an asshole, but the way that it was. Came off in the scene because he shows up and none of the criminals care about him. They're like, where's Batman? Like, hopefully he's like, okay, you know, you're here, but where is the real threat? And then all of a sudden, like, little did they know, Dick is the real threat. So that was funny.
This is why you never underestimate the boy wonder. This
exactly.
Is
why. Yeah. Exactly. And then other stuff will go into my dislikes. Beast Boy really wasn't around much. I like that, you know, it was kind of funny that he showed up in a video store. And the fact that he chose to be a tiger when he could just be, like, a dog or a monkey with, like, opposable thumbs or something. Still video games. Like, why did you choose to be a tiger guard? That doesn't make any sense. But it was funny. But anyway, going into what we did not like about this episode, Thoughts?
Dick definitely comes off as Batman light to me, and I'm not very fond of it. He's one of my all-time favorite DC characters, and I can't believe they did this to my son, so that he could be more tragic and dark or whatever. And I think his avoidance of people is generally strange, because he's usually friendly and people take to him, and that's also how he gets a lot of his information. So to see that he's not really friends with anyone in the police department, or like he's close to anyone, is strange and takes away from his character. And this show makes him seem super closed off when that's not his character at all. And I don't like that they've employed, I don't like that they've employed the sense of broodiness for him. And I also didn't like that Raven's mom was killed so soon in the premiere. Like this woman barely had time to breathe, and then she was just killed off and discarded without much thought. Like we never heard Raven talk about her after that. And then more than that, I feel like the show is trying to be too dark just because it can. It involves demons and stuff that Raven has to deal with, and that's understandable. But just the violence alone is too excessive for my taste, personally. And I think that, in general, the premiere didn't do much in the way of allowing the audience to truly invest in the characters. It felt like there was a lot of action and plot stuff all the time, and not enough time was given to stop and let the characters really feel and breathe. So there was a bit of an emotional detachment to everything that was happening. It was kind of slow and dragged out in a lot of places.
Patsy, go!
Okay. I don't have a problem with the dark tone in general. Like, I don't have an issue with things being dark. But I did think that Dick Grayson's character was a little bit like, he was a bit of a drag in the first episode. And then just like this dislike, or like, you know, doesn't want to do it Batman's way, is a little strange to me, because A, we don't know what Batman's way is to him. It's just like Batman is like a little shadowy figure that rescued him and made him a superhero, and now he doesn't like that. But then at the first opportunity, he, you know, became Boy Wonder and beat the crap out of them. So was his issue that Batman didn't beat the crap out of them enough? Is that his issue? Because, like, it's unclear to me. I'm not sure what he doesn't like about the way Batman was. Especially in that scene where he was with his partner, who was another dislike, because she seemed totally unnecessary as a character.
Yes.
And, you know, not to spoil anything, but in the future, that feeling of her necessariness did not go away. So, when you know, he tells her, like, oh, yeah, I had a partner, and, like, he was, like, a hero, but then I didn't like his heroism, and I had to step away from that. And she's like, oh, I guess you're not an asshole after all. And I was like,
yeah.
Is he not an asshole?
No.
Like, an asshole. Not an asshole, because he's like, yeah, everyone looked up to him, but I didn't like that.
Like, okay.
Doesn't make me, like him even more.
Right, but yeah. Apparently it made her like him, so whatever. Yeah, and I will disagree with May, Omo, I mean, I liked the look of Raven having the dream about Dick, but because it's like the only, like, it was like one time she had this dream, even though I assume it's a recurring thing for her, but like we see it the one time, and there isn't another situation in the first episode, and I'm not sure if there is in the next two, where somewhat feelings come to her, like, outside of being empathetic, like being an empath, right? She can feel people are feeling, but she's not, like, a psychic.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, why is she a psychic in this case? Just so that she could then go to Dick and say, everything has led me to this moment. And I was like, everything has led you to this moment? Like, I don't know if that's true. I think that you're being a little dramatic right now. Like,
she stalks him in her dreams.
Yeah, right? So, like, if I were, you know, I feel like I would have literally just had it be, I have no other recourse right now. I'm going to throw this brick at this cop car to avoid being kidnapped by this other person because I'm a little white girl and I can do that without getting murdered. And then Dick will show up and I will be like, aren't you that kid from the circus? Because everyone knows that he was this kid from the circus who was rescued by Bruce Wayne. You know, it's not like a top secret information. Mm-hmm. And then I feel connected to you because my parents have just been murdered as well. Look at me. We are connected now. The end, you know? I didn't need that little fate element.
Mm.
Especially when you've got the fate element in fate pushing them together like that without being like, this is going to be your fate! And I felt like it was a little bit more subtle with the Starfire thing because she has, you know, that picture she knows she was looking for and she doesn't know why. So that's fate, but it wasn't like, hello, look for this girl. This is now the thing that you need to do, right? Which leads me to my other dislike, which is that, like, why do they hate Ryan Vedder? What did he do to them? Why is he only in one totally random disconnected scene that did not tie into the theme of the episode at all? So, yeah. I just felt like it was... It would have felt more connected, probably, without that scene. But because it just made him seem, like extraneous... And that's already how the trailers have made him feel. Like, it's just like, hello, I'm here for comedic relief, but we don't know what that's going to look like yet, because I only have one scene.
See, I forgot to put in my dislikes about Beast Boy, because I forgot he was in the episode, so.
You forgot. I felt invested in Raven and Starfire by the end of the episode, and in Dick in terms of how he relates to Raven. But because Dick is kind of, I don't know, he feels like the center figure because he's Dick Grayson, I don't know that they did enough to establish him as a character and establish mm-hmm. what he stands for. And I think the reason for that is because they don't want to actually show Batman. And when so much of his character is based on who Batman is, it's hard when you don't establish what Batman is in this universe.
Interesting. Most of my issues with the pilot came from formatting and how it was directed and cut together. Because it was a lot, it was really Raven and Dick heavy in the beginning, and then maybe like halfway into the episode, it's like really Starfire heavy. And so it almost felt like two mini episodes, and so you had like 30 minutes of Dick and Raven doing stuff, and then it just like immediately cuts over to Starfire, and there's not a lot of like transition of how we got there. And so it's like, oh, is this a new episode now? Are we just going to get, like, 30 minutes of Starfire now? And, but, you know, that you don't, it, like, eventually cuts back over to Dick and Raven. But I just felt like it was a little bit disjointed in the sense that these two storylines didn't, they weren't, like, incorporated or cut together very well. I feel like it would have been interesting if it was, like, you know, solo Dick, solo Raven, solo Starfire, solo Dick, solo Raven, until, you know, incorporating her bits of her story in earlier when Raven and Dick were even in the same story arc in the beginning would have made it flow better because it would the main part that I took away from the pilot that was just introducing all these character stories and then Beast Boy at the very end. But with the three main ones, it was setting up their story. So it would have been better, I think, if they had incorporated Starfire earlier, like cut to her scenes earlier and come back to, like, once Raven and Dick got together, obviously that was going to take up a larger chunk of time before you cut back over to Starfire. But I just think them front-loading Dick and Raven in the beginning made the whiplash to Starfire a little bit disjointed and severe. So it's like a technical issue that threw me off. I didn't like that. Amy, Dick's partner, I don't even know, like, why did you even hire to cast somebody to play, like, you know, his partner when she didn't even do it? Like her two scenes were, you know, Dick doesn't like you, why don't you like me?
Yeah.
And neither of them did anything with that. Like, you know, the first one was, I don't like you. And then he goes off by himself. And then the second scene where she's like, you know, why are you like this? And then he does what Tati said, the whole, like, I didn't want to be a hero like him because, you know, I guess you're not an asshole after all, which didn't really make sense. That whole scene. And then nothing goes, like, and then they separate. And they don't do things together. I don't know, like, why she's here, or why she got assigned to Dick, or where she came from, or what her point is. And so I just felt like, why did you even have her in the episode? Like, she made less sense than Beast Boy, almost, you know?
That's true.
Story. And then, you know, obviously, Beast Boy not even showing up until the very final end credit of the episode. And that having... It would be interesting if it was like an ending credits kind of scene, and episode two starts out with like Beast Boy or incorporates more. But I know you guys have seen like the first three, and he's not even in the second episode.
Nope.
So I mean, what was the point of introducing him at that point, other than to say like this is the Titans, and we have to show were obligated to show all four of them at some point in this episode. So, right. I mean, it wasn't even like a 2-and-2 where it's like Beast Boy and Starfire on one side and Dick and Raven on the other side. So, I mean, yeah, the whole kind of disjointedness and of the Titans and when and where they come in and how that was all cut together, I didn't like. So, is that
sexy? Do you have any predictions that are not based on spoilers?
No.
Oh, just me? Oh. Yeah, because y'all are ahead of me.
I have predictions, but first I want to hear your prediction.
Well, all I got is that Corey's going to find Rachel.
That's a good prediction.
This stuff will go off from there.
Yeah. Yes, that is a good prediction. I'm glad that all it took was amnesia for her to become better at finding this girl. Now, I mean, obviously, also the girl's on the run. Sure, Pramod just got murdered. She's probably in the news more. Whatever. There's many, many reasons. I just thought it was funny that it was like, I've been looking for this girl for a blank amount of time. Now she has amnesia and nothing but a photo, and you know she's going to find her in much less than the amount of time that she was looking for her previously. But that's okay. Also, why was she looking for her in Austria? I'm sorry, I'll stop. I have so many questions. Why was she in Austria if she's looking for this girl?
There are 11 episodes, so we have time.
Time for answers.
I don't like, this should go in my dislikes. I don't like that she was in a whole ass relationship with someone that she can't even remember.
Yeah, I don't like that. Was creepy.
But I like her whole, like, what the fuckness to everything around her, because she just does not know what's going on. But I did not like that she was in, like, a relationship with somebody and does not remember.
Well, what. We also don't know how far, like, her, like, was it the amnesia came from the accident, which only happened, like, maybe a day before?
Yeah, that's another question. Because I'm like, how does she even know German? Like, her amnesia didn't go that far back that she didn't know German. Mm-hmm. And then she automatically knew English when someone spoke English to her. Mm-hmm. So,
I guess it's sort of like with your, like, it's like the riding a bike thing, right? There's, like, that memory where it's like, oh, wait, I can do this? And then there's, like, the memory of, like, this happened or didn't happen. So, I'm so scientific. I know everything about the human brain.
No, but that is true. Like, your language and your basic muscle movements don't change. You remember how to do that, but you don't remember, like, your life or, you know, certain people and things like that.
But, yeah, I thought that the Starfire part was really cool, but I agree with you that it's just kind of, like, cut there and it's weird. Maybe, I don't know. No, because I like that it started with Raven. Because I was going to say, like, maybe it would have been cool if it started with Starfire. She doesn't know who she is, but she knows she's got to find this girl named Raven, and then you cut to Raven. And then you go there. Like, that would have been a smooth transition. But I did like the way that it started with Raven. So I don't know.
Well, ladies with gumption from the Titans episode.
Starfire. Just because, I mean, she has amnesia, and look at her kicking ass and figuring things out and finding out what her purpose in life is.
No, she's not scared. She's not scared at all about, she doesn't have any memories, and these people are after her. She's not really scared about it. She's very, you know, she kind of, like, takes it on, like, head on. Like, she goes back to, she's retracing her steps, and she's doing all this stuff, and there's weird things, like, men tied up in rooms and, like, you know, attacking her or whatever, and she doesn't take it like, I should be scared, I need to run away, someone help me please. She's like, I'm gonna kick your ass, and then I'm gonna go and find out this other clue and kick their ass and then figure out what I'm supposed to do next. So I like her kind of, like, take charge kind of attitude about situations, even though she doesn't know what's going on. She doesn't let that define her situation. She just, you know, keeps going.
Yeah. So we've got Nora.
Oh, well, I will add Lynn. To Nora's Lady with Gumption nomination in that she learned how to phase for the first time, and she could have, like, flipped out and, like, I'm out. But she saved a plane full of people.
Aww. That's true.
Tati does not sound convinced.
No, what do you mean? I was the one that nominated Nora in the first place.
You're like, aww.
In this instance, she actually agrees with me.
So we've got Lynn from Black Lightning, you've got Kara Fowdy from Black Lightning, Nora from The Flash, and Corey from Titans.
Yeah.
You can take out Fowdy. I know you guys
will. I was going to say, I'm going to take out Fowdy. So, no. All right.
A for effort. Nora.
Yeah. F for Fowdy and execution.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, this is hard. This is hard. So who would like to vote first? Who'd like to cast their vote?
I'll say that I feel like Lynn had the strongest thing just because she was like fighting the patriarchy the whole episode.
I do like that.
Agent Odell, and then her versus Jefferson as well. I just felt like she had like the strongest moments, and the strongest motivations, and the strongest gumption.
Okay.
I would agree with
May,
that.
May, do you? Okay, you agree?
Yeah, because I think that she was scared, but she was still very stubborn about wanting to help these kids and doing it for the right reasons, that she faced that fear and went against her husband, too. And fought him for it, so.
And just, like, just putting her career on the line to a degree, too. Exactly. You know, she's getting herself in hot water with the ASA or whatever, you know?
With Asian Odell, like, he was freaking scary. And she could have been like, well, that's it. That's
I did my best. I did my best. But yeah, we see that she has a sign of steel and that she is a hero in her, you know, in her own way, in her realm of influence. So. Lynn it is!
Yay! So Lynn is our first Lady with Gumption of this season. Tune in next week when we have a whole shitload of shows back. And Arrow is premiering next week as well. Yeah. Figure out how we do then.
Yeah.
It's that one. But thanks for joining us. We'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye.